you are listening to episode 350 of the New World Order, and this is Quatu and your friendly host. I've got, first of all, some listener email to cover because one of them has caught a little bug, I would say. Maybe not a bug, but, well, maybe it's a bug. Anyway, let's talk about this listener email from Matthias. He says he opened up a terminal, and he attempted to navigate to a CUPS interface. So he issues the command W3M localhost colon 631, and it says it can't load localhost colon 631. Tries it again with the numerical address. So that would be the equivalent of localhost is 127.0.0.1. So he does W3M 127.0.0.1 colon 631, and essentially the same problem. Can't load the address from W3M. Tried it on a couple of different boxes, and it's just not, doesn't seem to be working. Now, if you do an lpstat-e, it shows that the printer exists. It shows that that it can find the jobs, the spool and everything. So what's going on here? Well, turns out, I did a couple of tests myself because I couldn't quite understand why it wouldn't be working. Obviously, my first thought was, well, maybe CUPS isn't running or something like that. Although once he got down to the IPP tool, I figured, well, okay, probably is, but let me run some tests. So I tried some tests, and I was able to replicate this problem outside W3M even with links and e-links and W3M, I got the same error. Couldn't load that address. I think one of them, either e-links or links, gave me back a little bit more information, though, and I don't remember the exact error that it gave me, but it gave me something that made me think that it doesn't understand that W3M localhost colon 631 is referring to a location over HTTP. So if you try W3M or links or e-links and append your CUPS address like localhost or 127.0.0.1 with http://, then you're good to go. It'll find that location and it'll navigate to the little CUPS site and it works. Interestingly, he discovered also that LPstat has a different abbreviation or a different option depending on what system you're running it on. For instance, apparently Raspbian LPstat-A and then Debian Stretch specifically LPstat-E. That was kind of interesting to me. I'm not really sure why that would be exactly, except that I know that Debian is, well, famously conservative in what they update in their distribution, so it could simply be that between, CUPS version, A, and CUPS version B, the option has changed from A to dash A to dash E or something like that. So I'm not really sure what the story is there, and I'm not sure how I would necessarily check that. But just, the solution to LPstat not acting the same on one system to another would be to take a real quick look at the man page. I don't think that's that big of a deal, but do be aware that there could be some options that maybe have changed or might be different on one system versus another. So thanks, Matthias, for the feedback on that. That's always interesting to see little quirks that none of us quite expected. I mean, retrospectively, I think I felt like, okay, should have known that the http://, was necessary. But I think it's tricky because you can go to other sites with a top-level domain, and it does get automatically detected. So I think it's the removal of that top-level domain that confused the little parser, probably. Okay, so know your hosts. So yeah, so today I wanted to talk about the philosophy and culture of bug reporting, which I think is important. And I know I mentioned this a little bit. I hinted at it in a previous episode, 348 or so. But in this episode, I want to lay it out. I want to talk about it. I want to talk about how the other side, the closed source stuff, doesn't provide you with abilities to report bugs or to give feedback, really, aside from going onto a forum and shouting into the void. I want to talk about kind of the idea of bug reporting and how it is expected to work and even how it does work. So bug reporting, I got introduced to it through an in-house bug reporting tool at an old job that I had. It was my first job in computing, really. And no, first for in like professional software development, that sort of level of things. And there was this, little tool that you would launch. It was a desktop app, actually, and it loaded all the bugs and looked at all the little bug reporters. It was called Radar, I think, if I recall correctly. And you could filter the bugs and look at all the different bug reports and so on. And I'd never really heard about bug reporting before. I mean, I'd heard about it, but I didn't know how sort of I heard about it in the context of, okay, here's this open source world, and as a way to contribute to open source, if nothing else, you could always file a bug. That was kind of the mantra. This is around 2006, 2008 time period. And so being face to face with a bug reporter, a bug reporting tool that I had access to the back end, and I could see all the bugs happening and the progress of the bugs. That was kind of a new experience for me, in a little bit. I mean, I used Bugzilla, so I wasn't completely off, fresh off the boat here, but I just never had that kind of involvement with a bug reporting tool. And when I say that kind of involvement, I mean, like, you had the bug reporter, the bug reporting client open all day. Like, it was like your email client, practically. It was open all the time. It was just something you launched in the morning, and it would stay open. And here's what I learned about bug reporting in general. And this, I think, kind of spans, at least in my experience, and it's been limited, because I've only experienced a couple of very specific bug reporting instances. But in my experience, a bug report is any issue that you have with software. If you have reason to believe that the bug that you have experienced, if the software has not behaved in the way that you expected it to behave, then that's a bug. Now, we also call something, for instance, when the software crashes your entire computer and mangles your hard drive, a bug. Not that that can happen, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. If your computer explodes because of a piece of software, we would call that a bug. And if you just don't like the color of a button, we call that a bug. So what I'm trying to say is that we have the whole spectrum with one little three-letter word, bug. We call it a bug, and it can be anywhere on that spectrum. It can be something simple that's simply a preference that you have, or it can be something detrimental to anyone who ever uses the software. And that's a valid thing. That's pretty universally acceptable, accepted. Like, if you file, quote, a bug, then anything within that spectrum is fair game. And I think for a lot of people, for many of us, that's a difficult thing to sort of come to terms with, because you think, maybe, possibly, you think, well, this doesn't really feel like a bug. I think I'm just doing something wrong. I think it's just me. I don't think it's really a bug with the software. But I guess what I have found in bug reporting is that that interaction between you and the software could have bugs as well. So maybe it isn't a bug in the software. Maybe it is just you. Well, then you're reporting a bug about yourself in relation to that software, and that's okay. Now, I'm not saying that you should file a bug without doing any amount of research on what caused that bug. Like, if you have the wherewithal, and you don't always, sometimes you're so out of your depth that you just don't even know what the problem could be. But if you do, then I think there is a time for due diligence before pressing enter on your computer keyboard, when you click, report or whatever. Sometimes, yeah, there's room for a little bit of investigation. So the first principle here is that a bug is anything that occurs that's unexpected. And the second principle then is that a bug report is valid, but a bug report is also a troubleshooting tool. And when I say that, I mean that if you've discovered something that happens that you wouldn't expect in a software, and this has happened to me several times in the past, I'll hunt down the bug report software, like whatever it is, the website that an open source project receives their bugs at. I hunt that down. Very often it's in there, it's integrated with their Git repository these days. And so it may not even be called a bug reporting tool. It might be called issues. In other places, it might be called a ticket or a support ticket. You file a ticket. You open a ticket. You file a bug. You open a bug. You file an issue. You report an issue. These are all pretty much the same terms for the same idea, which I've already just covered. So if you feel like you need to report something to the developers, then I think one of the benefits to doing that, to my second point here, is that while you are filling out the bug report, you are forcing yourself to repeat the problem. And that's the most valuable bug report of all, is the one that has 100% repeatable results. If you can give someone a recipe for how they too can experience this wonderful bug, then that's a perfect bug report. And sometimes that simply means that simply, you know, open the program, look in the upper right corner, notice that the green button, the stop button is labeled green, and in the left corner, the go button is red. And I expected the go button to be green and the stop button to be red. And I think that's bad user experience to confuse those two. Or maybe it's that the green button has no text whatsoever, and the red button has no text. And you're noticing that because you don't really see color in the same way that many people see color, those two buttons functionally have no difference to you. So you can't tell without some kind of label, you can't tell what those two buttons do. That's a bug. And that's 100% repeatable, right? Like, if you launch the thing and you look in the places that you have described, you'll see those buttons, and they will be the colors that you have described. Simple. It may be a little bit more complex, such as download the source code. The source code at this commit number, or at this commit hash, or this release number of the code. Type in /configure --prefix=usr. Observe that it errors out with unknown option prefix. That's a bug. You can't fix it yourself, maybe, or maybe you can. I mean, that's even better bug report. If you can prove all of those things are true, plus you know the place in the makefile to open up that option, then you could send the developers, along with your bug report, a fix for the problem. Say that this is solved if I put this line into the makefile, or, you know, whatever. I'm just making things up here. And the great thing about that is that they may not agree with your fix. They may think, well, that is a fix, but that's, we don't want to put a line in a makefile that's been generated automatically. What we really need to do is add a line in the makefile.am file, and that'll ripple through to the generated makefile. Well, you didn't know that. You don't know anything about how these things happen. All you know is that when you did the thing, it didn't do the thing. And that's fine. But at least my example might be a little bit convoluted, because .configure would actually generate that makefile, so I'm not really sure how that would work out. But anyway, you get the idea, right? So a bug report that is a recipe to reproduce what you have observed is the perfect bug report. And this isn't developers being sort of like, you know, demanding that you prove to them that what you have observed is something that you can reproduce necessarily. It's not that they need it for you to prove to them that you know a lot about computers or anything like that. It is simply so that when they look at it, they can get to the same point that you're at, so that they can start investigating the fix. Whether that fix is, oh my gosh, yeah, that's totally expected, that's what we wanted to happen, or the fix is, oh my gosh, that is a problem. We've never tried that in all of our, you know, as we were building it or as we were using it, we never thought about that problem as a problem, and now we see that it is, so we will fix it in this way. Doesn't matter. Either way, what they need to get started is the quick path, the fast travel path to where you got stuck. Because otherwise they're going to spend half their day trying to get stuck. And then once they do get stuck, then maybe they'll be able to get around to a fix. It's much faster if they can get straight to that fix right away. So that's a perfect bug report. Now, generally speaking, bug report culture is the idea of collaboration. And that's also, I think, kind of difficult for people to grasp sometimes, because to many people, a bug report feels either like you're bothering the developers or like the developers have plotted against you and you're exposing their evil, nefarious plans publicly in their bug reporting tool. It's one of those two things to a lot of people. In the first instance, you feel like you're bugging the bug reporter. You are bothering them. You're taking up their time, probably because of some stupid problem you've had. It's probably your fault. And you don't really want to bother them anyway. They're probably very busy people, and they're really smart because they're making these softwares that lots of people are probably using and loving. So it's probably just not that big of a deal. Shouldn't even file it anyway, right? No, you should. And you should observe this more as a friendly interaction rather than you troubling the developers. Because I know that, like, a lot of people, especially when you first get into open source, you may hear that reporting a bug is a contribution to open source. And that feels a little bit weird because you feel like that's not really a contribution. I'm just bothering the developers. That's not a contribution. That's actually causing problems. But no, it's actually a contribution. It is a collaboration. You are telling the developers, whether they know it or not, this is how their software has behaved for you. This is how you interacted with their software. Now, with that interaction, with that collaboration, you could get a yes, you're right, let's do something about that, or you can get something else, like, no, that's not really a problem for me. Like, it might be a problem for you, not a problem for me. And sometimes that might be wrong. That might be the wrong, quote unquote, wrong answer. If you're looking at a software and there's a green and a red button next to each other, neither of them labeled, both of them square, and you're telling the developers, look, to someone who cannot tell those two colors apart, that's bad design. You are making your software essentially unusable for these people. If the developer just doesn't care, then that's their answer. I think I would argue, and if you were the bug reporter, you'd probably argue as well, that that's not the right answer. It's not a good answer. But if that is their answer, and they're the ones making the change to the code, then that's kind of the answer. It's not a super satisfying experience, unfortunately. That's one of those collaborative experiences that doesn't make you think, I'd like to come back here and collaborate more later. Yeah, probably not. But it's a valid thing, right? I mean, it is a conversation that you can have with someone. And depending on who's sort of driving the ship at that point, that's who gets to call the shots. And interestingly, this happens to both developers and to, quote unquote, normal users like you and me. I've caught bugs in softwares before, and I have submitted patches, and they have come back to me and said, that's not really a problem for us. And so we're not going to integrate your fix because we don't think it's broken. I differ. I thought that it was broken, and I didn't like how it behaved. But to their in their view, that's exactly how they wanted to behave, or that was good enough for them, and so they just ignored the patch. In other times, they've taken the patch, but or they rather they've taken the spirit of the patch, but they've rewritten it themselves, and that's a completely valid thing. So whether you know how to develop or not, it doesn't really have any bearing on sort of the efficacy of your bug report. A bug report is subject to a lot of different views sometimes. And those views aren't necessarily based in technology all the time. I mean, sometimes it is. So sometimes it's just a question of, well, yes, I see that you might argue that that would be the better way to perform that action, but I decide that that is not something I want to do. And there are lots of different reasons. Developers don't always necessarily express the reasons clearly. I mean, sometimes the users don't either. It is a form of communication and collaboration, so it's subject to all the same kinds of misunderstandings as all other forms of communications you're subject to. And certainly if some if there's a better way to express something in a programming language, you might think that that's a perfectly valid reason to change a line in code. And you might file that as a bug report. But if the developer has something else in mind and they think, well, I see how this obscure expression is cleaner and more succinct than this other way that I've done it, but I feel like it is less comprehensible to people who are going to have to maintain this software later, or for people I hope will be reading my code later and sort of start participating in maintaining it with me. And so I'm not going to use this other method that you've proposed. And while you could argue quite validly that that's not the technically correct thing to decide upon, that that's not the correct choice, it still could be the correct choice for that developer, for their purposes. And that's how bug reports go. That's how communication happens, and that's okay. Now, the other thing that people, I think, sometimes think of a bug report as is kind of, like escalation. Like, the software is not working for you on your computer right now, and so now you've gotten really angry, and you're going to take it straight to upper management. And your only path to the upper management of the software is the bug reporter. And so you're going to file an issue or a bug or a ticket, and you're going to let this person know how horrible their coding skills are and how broken their code is and so on. And once again, that's kind of, it is a form of communication, but it's probably not the optimal form of communication. And it is not one that encourages or inspires a quick fix. It doesn't inspire collaboration. It doesn't inspire, it doesn't inspire. It just brings people down. And so before ever filing an angry bug, if you're filing a bug in anger, then you definitely want to kind of back up to that step two, where the bug report is your chance to troubleshoot. And you kind of want to back up to that step and make sure that while you're reporting the bug, you are providing information that is useful to fixing the bug. And anything beyond that, it doesn't necessarily have any kind of real necessity in the message. So for instance, if there's some software out there that builds on, let's say, macOS and BSD, but flagrantly ignores the Linux platform, then you might get pretty angry at that as a Linux user. And similarly, if there's a software application out there that builds for Linux and, I don't know, let's say Windows, but not for BSD and not for Mac, certainly, then you might get angry at that if you're a BSD user. And it's a valid thing, right? I mean, the software seems like it ought to work, and most of the code is completely usable on any platform. It's just this stupid little thing right here in their build process that makes it not possible to build correctly. Or it's their choice in the widget set. Like, what were they thinking choosing that widget set instead of something sane, like Qt, and so on. So you've got issues with the way some choices that have been made. And while those are valid issues, you have valid feelings about that, it's not necessarily useful to fixing the bug to point out that the decision itself, the choice itself, was a poor one. So for instance, you can tell someone that it was a stupid choice for them not to use your favorite widget set because it prevents the correct hardware abstraction required to access that peripheral. And what a dumb choice that was. Or maybe that wasn't even a dumb choice. Maybe you believe that it might have even been maliciously made, like deliberately excluding this whole segment of the quote-unquote market. And you may be right. Like, we don't know, right? I mean, we don't know what was going through the head of the developer at the time. But either way, that's not going to fix the problem. So concentrating on results is really important on the bug reporting process, I think. Because while all the feelings around all of this are perfectly valid, and we'll never know the true story, it also literally does not help fix the problem, right? It doesn't matter why the wrong widget set was chosen, or why the wrong framework was chosen. The point is that it was chosen. And so now let's talk about what our options are from this point on. Is the only solution to change frameworks? That's a pretty big, it's a big task. So it might not happen realistically, and yet it still may be an issue, a choice, right? It might still be an option. And then maybe another option is, I don't know, some kind of interstitial code to make that framework recognize the thing that it doesn't recognize, or something like that. I don't know, an extra dependency or something. So maybe that's the second option. So really, the fix is going to come from one of these two things. It's not going to come from exposing the developer as a hater of this or that platform. It's not going to come from deriding the developer's choice in platform or whatever. It's going to happen from these two results, one of these two results. These are just made up examples, but you get the idea. The bug reporting process is all about collaboration. And collaboration, really, I think the very meaning of the word means that you're laboring towards something together. And debating something doesn't really get towards a solution. The solution is all about what can be done to fix the problem, maybe debating the virtues of both of the, you know, the different options on the table, but limit the conversation to that. Limit the conversation to the solution rather than to really anything else, because bug reporting is mostly purely functional. It is a purely functional activity. You don't file a bug just to say hi. You file a bug to report some kind of interaction that you have had with software that needs to be fixed. Concentrate on the collaborative nature of bug reporting. Now, interestingly, and almost counter to what I have just talked about for 10 minutes or whatever it's been, the fourth principle is that bug reporting is also a task management system. And this is something that surprised me when I was working at this company where I was initially introduced to sort of formalized actual big business bug reporting. It turns out, I realized, bug reporting, while it is communication with a developer, it is also a way for a development team to coordinate amongst themselves and, amazingly, to future contributors, people who don't even yet exist on their team. It's a way for those, for all of those people to coordinate how a fix is going to occur. And this is something that I wish I could see in many, many other industries. Like, this should be all over the place. And it's almost amazing to me that bug reporting isn't more of a thing. And I guess, I mean, like I say, I've got a limited scope. You know, I've got multimedia, which has no concept of bug reporting, and I've got, I should say, content creation, right? No sense of bug reporting in content creation. And I've got software or slash IT, and that obviously has a very strong sense of either bug reporting or ticket support, or issue reports nowadays as well. So you've got a pretty strong sense of that in those two industries. And I feel like I would love to see this concept of record keeping and task assignment and task resolution in other industries, because I think it could be huge. I really do. I think it could be a big, big deal for other industries. Just the simple idea that if you need something done, then you write it down and you put it on you put it on a post-it note and you put it on a wall, and then you've got that thing recorded. Now, if someone wanders by and they see something that needs to get done, then they could claim that post-it note. They could put their little sticker on it or something, their mark on it, and they could go accomplish that task. And when the task is finished, they could bring it back, hang it off of that post-it note, or put that post-it note on it, whatever, and then it's done. The ticket is closed. Now, there's a little known sort of, I guess, tradition in at least open source bug reporting that if you've opened a bug report, then you are also the sort of the only person who can close the bug report. That's not strictly true. There are cycles. For instance, if you report a bug to Fedora, the Fedora project, then when it gets reported, it goes into the Bugzilla system at Red Hat. And for the life cycle of Fedora, which is just the briefest of a moment, just a little blip in the greater scheme of things, for that cycle, that bug is active. And if it gets fixed during that cycle, then great, you probably will see the fix, such as the development tradition of Fedora, to be honest. They fix things and then they push it. So you very frequently actually see the fix. And that's kind of one of the beauties of Fedora, is that rapid development. You could file and see the resolution all within you know, a year or something. Now, other times the fix doesn't get done, it doesn't happen, and one of two things can happen. Either the bug gets grandfathered into the next cycle, or it gets closed because maybe something has supplanted it anyway. So if you had filed a bug on the foo subsystem, and It turns out that Foo is no longer shipping with Fedora, 83, because it's been replaced by Bar, then the bug gets closed because that's no longer relevant to Fedora. But if you file a bug with lots of other projects, then they may comment on it and say, well, yeah, that's I don't know, that's not a bug. It's actually meant to do that, so we won't fix it. And then they may propose that the bug is closed. But if you opened that bug, you could reopen that bug and say, okay, well, you say it's supposed to happen like that, but the button itself says the exact opposite. When I click that button that's labeled stop, it actually goes instead of stops. So maybe there needs to be a new bug about the text on the button, if not the function of the button. Something like that. Or maybe they can maybe they'll propose that the bug is closed, and they'll just let you be the one to close it. That definitely happens sometimes as well. They tend to ping you in some way, either by email or they're in the bug reporting tool, which may be hooked up to an email system to send out reports to you on a regular basis. And you are expected to go back into the bug tracker and analyze the problem and the solution and mark it solved if it is solved. It's just like if you've ever used a support forum, a well-organized support forum, there's a solution. You're supposed to mark something solved so that people notice that they don't have to keep looking at that bug. And that's an important part of bug reporting. Now, there are plenty of times where people have reported bugs and then just kind of wandered off. And I mean, that happens. That does happen. Bugs will all get closed without the person's interaction after maybe a certain amount of time, for instance. That's life. I think that's probably happened to us all, and I think that's acceptable. I think in an ideal world, the person who opened the bug would also be able to verify that it has been fixed. Certainly in a structured environment where you're paid to be a QA person, that's exactly how it would always happen. It doesn't always happen like that in real life, though, so that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen that way. But ideally, that would be the flow of it. And I think it's a brilliant, brilliant little scheme that's just so perfectly designed. It's so simple and yet so perfect. Because the nature of a bug, especially an open source bug tracker, but even to a degree, any bug tracker, it doesn't even have to be on the internet. It can just be a system by which problems or issues rather are recorded and then they are worked upon, and any work that got put in toward that issue is recorded there. And so the lifespan of that issue is on record. And if someone goes away, that's fine. Someone else can inherit that bug. That's a huge part of a bug tracker, is that the work getting done toward a solution for that issue is tracked within that bug. It's updated every day. At the end of every day, after you've worked on something, you update that bug. It's partly for yourself, honestly, just to keep yourself on track, so you remember after the weekend where you left off on Friday, or it's to help you keep track of the decisions that you have made in your attempts to getting this bug fixed. It's also a place to continue to communicate with the person who reported the bug and so on. So that's partly for yourself, but it's also if you leave the organization and someone else comes in, then they may inherit that bug from you, and then they'll be able to see the whole process, and they can take over that task. And if someone brand new comes on board and sees the bug and knows more about the solution than you do, then they're able to solve that bug, and then they can propose the fix, or they can implement the fix and propose that it's closed or whatever. So it's this dynamic kind of task system whereby anyone with permission to see the things that need to be done can chip in and do it. And that's one of the greatest, I think, contributions of software development that it has had to offer. And this might not have started with software development. I really don't know. I don't know the history of this sort of thing. But from my point of view, it's definitely one thing that has popularized it. And that system, I feel, could be absolutely invaluable for so many different industries. I mean, even in multimedia, I could see how that would be an absolute key principle in organizing, for instance, an independent work of art. Something where you're a small team, you don't have a bunch of money to outsource a bunch of tasks. But you have a task board and you have a flow of people willing to help. And I say a flow because a lot of times in independent art, That is what you have. You have people who come in, they're eager to help for just as long as it takes for them to get their next gig, their next paying gig. But once they start getting paid, they're going to disappear because that's, they got to live. They got to do something. So they'll help for free until they get paid. Or whatever the scenario might be. Maybe you've got a little bit of funding and maybe you're paying some people. So they're able to take a pay cut and help you out, but then they're going to leave, you know, whatever you can imagine. Just a task board of things that need to get done for this project would be huge for a collaboration, because there are so many projects out there that have no sense of tracking how the different components that they need in order to make this bigger thing, they don't know how those are going to get taken care of individually, nor do they have a platform to organize that, to make that actually a usable thing to lots of different people. I can just kind of imagine, really, a public-facing AGPL, of course, bug tracking tool that is friendly to a broad scope of industries. Maybe it would be customizable to each industry or something. And people could use that for tracking tasks and projects. And I think to some degree, some of the Kanban stuff out there lately has to some degree become that. It's kind of this weird sort of bug tracker / project management tool that to some degree works. There, I think there are permission problems there that no one has really thought to quite. Yeah, I'm not sure that that it was designed for the way that it's being used necessarily, but I have definitely seen people using Kanban boards for this sort of thing. I mean, and it is valid to do that. I'm just saying that in terms of being a cross-industry kind of robust tool, I don't know that what exists right now is exactly what people actually need, but it's probably pretty darn close. And anyway, it's a great little tool for task management, and certainly at the job where I sort of first got trained on how to sort of be a good bug citizen, good bug client citizen, bug reporting citizen, one of the quirks of the bugs, the bug reporting tool, was literally that people would use it for personal tasks as well. So you would literally see a software developer with, you know, I don't know, fix the compile script for this application, change out the red widget for the green widget, buy milk, fix the, you know, change the language, optimize the language in this class file. And you're looking at those things, you buy milk. Yeah, they'll literally file bugs for themselves so that they remember to do daily tasks that they have to do for real life. And it was kind of funny to see that sort of thing, but totally legitimate, because that's how powerful bug reporting can be. It's a thing where you've got a to-do list, and when you do the list, you close the bug. Or when you do the item, you close the bug, and your list gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And then the next day, it gets replenished. You got a whole new set of tasks. That's bug reporting. That's how it's done, and that's why it's done, and that's how things get fixed. It's a really, really efficient method of working. I'm not saying it's the only way of working. I'm not saying it's the last way we'll ever have to work efficiently. There might be something better out there. There might be something different that other people prefer to bug reporting. You know, a different system, a different way to visualize things, certainly. But like I said, the Kanban boards that seem to be kind of popular now, that seems to be a thing. People seem to be pretty comfortable with that model, sort of the moving a digital card from the left of the screen to the right of the screen as they progress through different stages that they need to get to, that they need to get through in order to be done. Although, again, realistically, I don't see people actually using Kanban in that way anymore. I see people using it that way, but I'm saying the general public, now that they've discovered what Kanban is, whether they know the term Kanban or not, or just the brand name of the website, I don't see people doing it in a Kanban method. I see them, at least not the Kanban that I was sort of taught. It's not a progression. It's more of like, well, here's a list of things that I need to do. Here's another list of other things that I need to do. And when they're done with them, they simply archive the card or delete the card or, you know, whatever, or maybe put it in a different list of tasks that they've done. So that is kind of, that's something that I've noticed And certainly the with Kanban, I haven't seen yet a system of Kanban that's really designed for kind of keeping record of what steps have been taken. I mean, there are oftentimes note fields and things like that, comment fields, but it's not quite, I wouldn't say it was quite like a bug reporting system. Either way, the principle is the same, and the principle is an important one, and that is that issues and communications about a topic can be recorded and placed in a common location so that many eyes can see them, and then contribution can be encouraged from all of those people who have seen the issue. Potentially, someone can fix that issue and everyone benefits. It's one of those things that is very, very closely related to open source. I mean, it's important not to conflate the two. Bug reporting is not open source. Open source is not bug reporting. I mean, some bug reporters are open source, but I'm saying the process is not necessarily open source. You could have a bug reporter, a bug reporting system in a completely isolated system that no one will ever see, but you're using it just for, yourself or for you and some other person, a couple of other people, whatever. So, not necessarily the same. I'm just saying that because open source has open bug trackers, it makes it a very powerful system for a lot of contribution, a lot of collaboration, a lot of communication. When there's that many people communicating and collaborating, sometimes there are really fun potentials for misunderstandings and arguments and debates and so on. And I think that the cleverest thing to do is just to keep in mind that the point of a bug report is to find a solution. And if that solution sometimes does not align with what you imagined that the solution would be, that's okay. That's to be expected. It's not that you have failed. It's not that they've rejected you. It's simply that for whatever reason, they don't agree with your assessment of either the problem or the solution or both. And that's okay. That's part of the communication process. Sometimes you agree to disagree. Either way, a bug report has existed. It has been filed. It has been made known. It has been either resolved or closed as not resolved or fixed or not fixed or judged not to have been a bug in the first place. Whatever the case, it's an important part of the process. It's a powerful part of the process. And I think we should promote it as something that is really, really important to both open source and to collaboration, to learning, to shared knowledge, to task management, to efficiency, all those things, all those virtuous things that I think a lot of us in the computer world and in the open source world certainly kind of tend to like. So that's bugs. That's everything I have to say about bugs. I hope this has been somewhat informative and enlightening and has made you think about what all those bug reports are and why they exist and how you might be able to get on the fun. So thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next week. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network, usually in channels such as Augcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is @klaatu@mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's klaatu@member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, gnuworldorder.info and slackermedia.info. I will see you next time.
sorry, sorry, yes.